Hello, and welcome to What's Your Major? The journey between what you thought you needed to know and where you are now. My name is Robert Joel, and I just have some conversations with folks about what they studied or concentrated on while in school, or college, or technical training. And then we talk about whether what they learned in school led them along their intended path, if it went in different directions, and how it impacted them getting to where they are now. So I'm, again, very pleased to have a special guest today. This is someone who I have known and admired for, I want to say it's close to 35 years now. And so, does that sound about right?
Yep.
Okay, good. So please help me welcome my guest for the day, Bill Ballmer. And the crowd goes wild. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I am great, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
I'm honored.
Just because I'm glad to talk to you, but secondly, you're going to present a major here that is a first for us in the arts, and even the commercial arts, which is even more interesting to me. So I have one starter question for you, Bill, and that is, Bill, what's your major?
Okay, my major was something that you wouldn't find at most schools or probably any other school than the one that I went to, which was a small liberal arts university in the Midwest. It was the 1980s, and my major was called commercial music / vocal performance. So what that means is that the major program was designed for musical performers in all kinds of different instruments to learn not only how to perform classical music, but to feel comfortable and knowledgeable about working in a recording studio at the same time.
I love that.
I had to, as part of the major, I had to complete all of the same requirements as a classical vocal major, vocal performance major. But I also had to do a lot of studio work on both sides of the glass, performing. And also they wanted us to get a handle on what happened behind the scenes. So recording, engineering, production, jingle writing. And I also, in addition to my classical music theory, took jazz, rock theory, and history, jingle writing, all kinds of other things like that. Acoustical physics in the science department.
Wow.
So it was very unusual and interesting for me. And the other thing I should add, particularly about the major, is, as I said, it was designed for performers, but at the same time, they needed people to act as engineers for all these people who were doing work in the studios as performers. Right. Right. And there was no audio or recording engineering program. So there were those of us in the commercial music program who were interested in that and kind of took up that mantle, if you will, of being the engineer. So I was a recording engineer student who took that further than the degree required, and managed the studio and so on. So that's pretty much what it was in a big nutshell.
That's awesome, because that sounds really interesting and complex. So, of course, I want to know what led you to that point in your life, your formative years, what led you to that, and also in your particular instance, because it went into business and it went into some engineering and other aspects. Was it what you thought it would be too? Share with that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. Before I went to college, first of all, I came from a musical family. Everyone in my family is musical. I started performing when I was 6. And I was really always on that path, you know. I throughout high school, I did fairly well in school, but I concentrated all my energy on music. I was in pretty much every musical thing that I could be in.
Yeah.
So I always kind of knew that I was going to go into music. And then also in high school, I, like a lot of kids my age who were into music, I started playing music in rock bands.
Yeah.
And as part of that, did some work in some recording studios locally.
Okay.
And just found that I loved it. I loved working in recording studios. Anytime I could spend in a recording studio, I was happy.
Yeah.
So I looked for, specifically for a program that had recording studio work. And there were really, at this time in the mid 80s, there were like maybe three in the country that had decent state-of-the-art equipment, and only one was within a couple thousand miles of me here in the Midwest, and that's where I ended up.
Yeah, because it sounds much more like a West Coast thing.
Right, there's either West Coast or Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. Whenever anyone was in the studio, one of the managers had to be there. And there were four, I think, four of us, and the studio was booked 24/7. And so if you, at the beginning of every semester, anyone who wanted studio time, we stood in a line to sign out our studio time for the semester in a book. And if you didn't get in on that first day, you were out of luck. Wow. So I was during that time, amazingly, I was sleeping on average about 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about it was I was never tired because I was so into what I was doing. I was loving every minute of it. I noticed this when I was in school that, you know, when you go to college for something in the fine arts, if you complete all of the requirements, like in most degree programs, you will get a degree.
Yeah.
Oftentimes in the fine arts, that has very little to do with whether you're good enough to succeed.
Oh yeah, okay, I see that.
In that field.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
In our education system. I remember one time while I was in college, we had all these music professors who were just monster musicians, right?
Yeah.
And we were learning all this stuff from them. And I remember one of them, I overheard him talking to one of the other professors. And he said, one of my students came up to me, said something to me the other day. He said, you know, something about getting to be as good as me. And I said, are you crazy? Don't you think that if we, all of us professors here, if we could be out there making a living playing, we would do that? You shouldn't be aspiring to be as good as me. You have to be better than me if you want to make it anywhere in this field.
Wow.
You know, and that stuck with me. People go into applied music like I did, and a lot of people go into education, which is great too. Like I said, if I were listening to this, I would think, well, maybe this person just wasn't good enough. And so I almost feel like I need to defend my repertoire. I won every award I could possibly win in one of the best high schools in the state for everything, as well as fine arts. I went to all-state, not only all-state choir, but all-state honors choir. And when I walked into the second rehearsal, other kids were pointing at me and going, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
And I was recruited out of high school to some of the most well-known music schools in the country. Chose not to go there for two reasons. Number one, they didn't have the studio that I was looking for. And number two, I wanted to have a regular college experience with people around who weren't just musicians.
Okay.
And when I finished my senior recital, the dean of the School of Fine Arts called me into his office, which he never did with anybody that I ever heard of, and basically berated me for not going on to graduate school in applied vocal performance and becoming a recitalist. And since then, you know, I've sung more times than I can count with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, which your listeners may or may not know is one of the finest orchestras in the world.
Yeah.
I've sung with Dennis DeYoung. I've sung with Peter Cetera. So I pride myself on being able to do all kinds of different genres.
I mean, those are not only two well-known talents, but two very unique and distinct talents in their voices.
Right.
This is fascinating. So I don't know where this is going, but I think we are going to take a quick break here.
Sure.
And then come back for the next leg of the story.
Okay? Glad to. Okay.
Okay, so I went to the fridge and I got myself a beverage because I can't wait for the second half of the story. So
when it all comes tumbling down.
So you're well prepared, you're in a program you love and you're doing well and you're graduating. And so now what?
It's all your sister's fault.
Under the bus.
No, honestly, I met a girl in college.
Yeah, you do.
Who happens to be related to you.
Yep.
And we decided to get married the summer after I graduated. She graduated a year ahead of me.
Yep.
And my plans for my own career at that time were to move to LA and seek out any kind of studio work I could find as either a musician or an engineer.
Yep.
Remember how I said that very few schools were teaching anything like that? Well, very few studios were looking for anyone who was already trained. They wanted to train people their way.
Okay.
The typical path to becoming a recording engineer up until that time was you would volunteer to do custodial work or whatever you could to get your foot in the door.
Yep.
And if you didn't anger anyone too much, they might let you tear down some sessions afterwards. And if you didn't break anything, they might let you learn how to set up a session. And, you know, this all took time.
Casey of Casey and the Sunshine Band got his start. He was like the custodian in the studio. And the one or two off hours of the day that nobody was in there, they let him mess around and stuff. And he started making records, yeah.
Right.
And so more people than just him had to do that, yeah.
Yes. And so then people like me show up and say, hey, I'm already a recording engineer. I've got production experience. I know how to run the board. I know how to, you know, work with performers. I know how to work with all the different kinds of instruments. I know what the different kinds of microphones do. I know how everything works. And they would look at you like, and you just want to come right in here and take the place over, you know? So that was the fatal flaw in the program, really. Of all of the people that I know who went through the program, I can only think of two who actually ended up doing this for a living.
Okay.
As far as studio work, engineering. The choices were basically Nashville, LA, or New York at that point in time.
Sure.
I already ruled out one third of that. But that was my hope, was that I could move to LA, work in a studio in any capacity possible, And what made me feel at the time that that might be something that could work, television studios were just beginning to broadcast in stereo, not even 5.1, right? Yeah. But they were just then starting to pay attention a little bit to audio for TV.
Okay.
And so I was thinking, well, this is great. You know, the audio for video field is going to blow up, right? They're going to need all kinds of audio engineers for all these TV shows now.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my plan. And my fiance at the time graduated with a degree a year ahead of me, like I said, in biology. And had a decent job here in the Chicago area. And she told me at the time she was willing to leave it so that we could go to LA. And I was just like, I can't ask you to do that.
Right.
You know, so that's pretty much how it happened. I've done some performing in studios over the years, quite a bit actually. I've done, like, in addition to the other freelance jobs that I've done singing, I've had a regular gig at a church for almost 30 years now. Scary.
Yeah.
I've been in professional ensembles for you know, decades at a time. So I've called myself a part-time professional musician throughout all this. But I also I was a banker for a while, which I hated. I worked myself up into middle management there, and was pretty successful with it, but I just didn't like it, you know. I hated getting up and going to work every day. And so when we had kids, Mary, my wife, was still making more money than I was, and I hated my job and she enjoyed her job, so it just made sense for, if one of us was going to stay home with kids, it was going to be me. So I became a stay-at-home dad, which was pretty unheard of at that time.
Right.
So I did that for a long time, I think 13 years. I have started my own business as a grant writer, mostly for arts organizations, because that's kind of where my passion lies. Yeah. So I did that for a while. I've done audio installations, design and installations for various organizations, buildings in the area. I worked for a company doing that for a while. Now I do just kind of general office work. I work in a church office during the day. Unfortunately, the singing part of my daily routine has kind of disappeared because of COVID. There's very little of that happening for anyone
for the moment.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I love music, but it is not my life like it's yours. And so when we were talking about changes, people just talk about singing, and you know, I didn't immediately think of that. Like, yeah. And that, just that domino effect of how it affects people's livelihoods and their stability and that kind of stuff. That's certainly easy to overlook. And
have a lot of friends and colleagues who are in that boat right now. And I count myself lucky that I'm really not. You know, I've lost some income, but nothing that is going to, you know, put us out of our home or anything like that, like some people that I know.
And, you know, I was maybe a little more into theater than music compared to you. You know, I just think about, you know, the casts and the crews and all the people who keep theaters going, and, you know, how this has impacted them over, I mean, it's going on close to a year now. And it's it's really unfortunate, and we've gotten off on a little bit of a side topic, but we do definitely, I'm sure, both want to encourage people to, however you're able to support the arts right now.
Absolutely.
It's really important that we do that.
Yes. 100%.
Okay, so anything as far as wrapping up, or you want to share some of the incredible wisdom you've gleaned over the day?
You know, well, I was, maybe you were about to get to this. I was waiting for the big question, which is, was it worth it? You know, what I studied in college. And I've been, ever since you talked to me about maybe doing this, I've kind of been going back and forth on that. In many, many ways, I would say absolutely it was worth it. Even for just those 4 years of experience that I had while I was in college, it was worth it, because it was an amazing time in my life. And I met so many wonderful people and formed so many great relationships. So that experience in itself has a huge amount of value, regardless of where I ended up or eventually.
Well, I mean, you actually had literally lifelong friendships and relationships from that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know if you feel this way about theater, but to me, when you perform with someone, it creates a bond. It makes you much closer than you ever could have been in really any other way.
Right. And you talked about how little sleep you used to get, you know, when in with rehearsals in theater, you put in so many long hours. Mm-hmm. And you know, they call it a play, you know, because it doesn't feel like work, you know. And when you're performing an instrument, you're playing it, right? Because it doesn't feel that way. And that is something that, with a musician, non-musician, a theater person, non-theater person, it's a different kind of bond, absolutely. And I remember when I was graduating college, and I talked about this on the first episode, you know, I made that choice to go corporate and become Dilbert, you know. But my friend Pat said to me, you know, he said, theater will always be part of my life. I can't imagine theater not being part of my life. Mm-hmm. And that has rung true for me. And, you know, in the, I guess it's 30 years since I graduated college, I have had a grand total of one paying professional music gig. So technically speaking, right, I made a professional, I made $75 one night. But the arts have remained part of my life. And so I absolutely think it's worth it, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you grow as a person, and there's no substituting those relationships.
Right. So, yeah, there's that on the one hand. On the other hand is I'm lucky enough to have a spouse who made enough money that we were able to do all right, despite the fact that I don't have really a college degree that would tend to make you a lot of money. Yeah. You know, I didn't major in finance. So, you know, if I had been on my own these last, we've been married 33 years now, if I had been on my own these last 33 years, I would have been in trouble. Mm-hmm. Which is something that, you know, if people are listening to this and are thinking about going to college to go into the arts, I would say be very careful about that. You know, I got lucky. I'll admit that. But there are also, I think, some things that you can do to kind of hedge against that. And by that, I mean, when you look at what you want to go into and what you're going to study to prepare yourself for that, I would advise people to do things, find things that will make you flexible, so that you have skills that you can use in lots of different fields.
Yes.
And then the biggest mistake I would say that I made was my focus was too narrow.
Okay.
Because like I was saying before, I had this plan where I was going to be trained to be a recording engineer, and I didn't realize, well, I guess I did realize that studios didn't work that way, but I thought they would love having someone come in, you know, already trained, and that wasn't the case. So, you know, without being able to broaden my skill set outside of that, I really locked myself into a desperate situation when it came to trying to find work in that field.
And you're far from the only person, you know, that happened to. You know, I worked in human resources for a long, long time. And, you know, companies are looking, you know, for someone who perfectly fits a job description, and then you have a disruption like we have now, and you know, can the person pivot to what we need them to be doing now that there's a new reality?
Right.
Whereas someone like me with sort of a general background, people are like, well, you know, he's not a statistician, or he's not he doesn't fit into that column. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it difficult in that way as well. We could have a whole other episode about how the technology of your field has changed to the point and what that could mean. Now, I think that would be a fun conversation for us to have.
Yes.
Sometime separately.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I remember when I was doing audiovisual stuff in college, like there were very few sources for the equipment and the ability to do these things, right? And now, literally everybody's phone, you know, can make movies and stuff. So
yes,
that would be a really fun conversation to have sometime.
I would love to have that conversation. I've had it many times with many people.
Cool. Meanwhile, I do appreciate you sharing your insights and your experiences with us, because you know this is really just to help people. We're all seeking, hopefully. We're all trying to figure out, you know, where life is taking us, and listening to people's stories and seeing how they might apply to ourselves. And it not only grows our ability to determine our own destiny, it also helps build empathy with others. And so I appreciate you sharing, Bill. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for doing this. I think it's great.
And I also appreciate anyone who might be listening. Who knows? We'll see.
I'll listen.
Yeah, I know. I know my sister will listen for sure, right? So thanks very much. I'm Robert Joel, and this has been What's Your Major? Today we were talking about commercial music and vocal performance and the arts in general to a degree. So thanks, Bill. We're just trying to help people sort out their journey between what we think we need to know and where we are. We are brought to you by Culture Change Coaching, available for organizations, groups, and individuals. Find them on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening in, everyone. This is What's Your Major? Talk to you next time.